And a very good morning to everyone. The first case on our call this morning is number 032506, the United States against Frank Duran. Mr. Ferranti.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the Court. My name is Bill Ferranti. I'm here this morning on behalf of defendant appellant Frank Duran. I'm a third-year law student appearing this morning by permission of the Court pursuant to Circuit Rule 34H. I'm supervised by Abner Mikva. With me at counsel table is also Patrick Curran. For clarity, I will at times this morning refer to defendant and to his brother David Duran by their first names. In January of 2003, defendant was convicted by a jury sitting in the Northern District of Illinois of firearm and drug trafficking charges. Because of our limited time, despite raising five issues in this appeal, I'd really like to focus this morning on an issue of first impression in this circuit, specifically what it means to possess a firearm in furtherance of a drug trafficking crime under 18 U.S.C. 924C.
Now, Mr. Ferranti, David testified that the guns that were found at the safe house were for protection in the drug business. There was plenty of evidence, it would seem, that Frank was aware of and used guns himself in the business. Why wouldn't that be enough to establish that the guns were used in furtherance of the conspiracy?
It probably would, Your Honor, except for two things. Two things both related to what the record in this case actually showed. The first is less important, but Frank never used firearms. All that the government showed was that they were sitting in his apartment. More importantly, with regard to the Beretta itself, the firearm on which the charge is based, David testified he used it, quote, for protection, period. That was the end of David's testimony with regard to the Beretta. Now, the foundation the government laid leading up to its questioning of the Beretta was whether David was aware that it was illegal for a felon to possess a firearm. Their questioning went entirely towards the legality of the possession of the firearm. They did not link the possession of the firearm to drug trafficking in any way. Now, maybe they could have. David was a witness testifying pursuant to a plea agreement with the government. He was the government's witness. If he didn't testify truthfully and fully, the plea agreement presumably disappears. The government didn't follow up. This error of attention, or maybe, who knows, they maybe know more than we do at this point about what David would have testified to, they chose to rest on the fact that guns were found in a drug dealer's apartment. They did not elicit any testimony connecting the firearm to drug trafficking.
Well, but that there wasn't any other occupation he was engaged in, was there?
Well, a number of the wiretaps actually show that David was a freelance contractor, and more to the point, he's living. This is his apartment. Unlike a case like Mackey, for example, in the Sixth Circuit, where we have a crack house with a rifle sitting next to a couch in an apartment that's otherwise bare. No kitchen utensils, no food, no clothes, no bed. This is an apartment. David's other residences were his sister's house, where he stayed from time to time, and the Cermak house was actually his girlfriend's house. This is David's apartment. This is where he lives. All that we have is guns, a gun, as far as the charge is concerned, in a drug dealer's apartment. Now, Congress intended in amending Section 924C to expand its scope. After Bailey, they wanted to reach a little bit further than what the Supreme Court was allowing. That's why we have possession. Congress did not want to go all the way to every drug dealer with a gun. That's why we have in furtherance. Now, the Department of Justice actually recognized this in objecting to the original version of the statute. Their proposal was that Congress amend the statute to provide for possession during and in relation to a drug trafficking crime, following the structure that we already have for use or carry. Congress didn't do that. Now, to give full effect to Congress's intent, to the language of the statute, to the structure of the statute, we need to make in furtherance mean something other than during and in relation to.
Do you concede, as the government states, that other circuits have found similar facts as we have here to be adequate?
No. I do not, Your Honor. The statement of the law that the other circuits have is essentially what the defendant is arguing for today. When you look at the facts of those cases, cases in six other circuits have similar situations, guns and drugs in an apartment, a gun that is not on the defendant's person at the time that it's found, but they also have evidence of on-site trafficking. They have an active crack house. They have, as I said, in Mackey, they have in Wall a sale that just took place moments ago. In every case, we have distribution-sized quantities of typically cocaine, and in almost every case, with the exception of the most recent one in the D.C. Circuit, we have customers or clear, unequivocal evidence of on-site transactions. Now, in the Chase opinion that I drew to the court's attention in the district court in Massachusetts, going through all of these cases, Judge Gertner concluded that the essential element, in fact, is evidence of on-site trafficking. Just having a gun with implements of the underlying crime, be it the crime of violence or drug trafficking, isn't enough. We need to actually show some sort of actual possession in furtherance of the crime.
So it's your view that if we agree with you, we will not be creating a circuit split?
That's correct, Your Honor. The essential element is really the facts of the case. It's not the law, except with regard to the factors. We have a separate issue with regard to really what's appropriate for the jury to consider in the first instance. But with regard to the law of the circuit, the law prevailing in other circuits, no, Your Honor. Absolutely, all we are asking for is that on the facts of this case, the court make a distinction between what it means to possess a firearm in furtherance of versus what it means to possess in relation to.
Tell me again where the bathrobe was located in the bathroom in his apartment?
Correct. Now, the layout of the apartment, we have three different bedrooms in the apartment. The bathroom is in the middle of the apartment. There were no drugs. There were no other guns. There was no paraphernalia in the bathroom. The two other guns were found down the hall in the back bedroom. The drugs were found up front in the kitchen. The scales were found up front in the dining room. We don't have a gun sitting on top of a stash of drugs. There's nothing in the record to distinguish.
Well, you're not saying we'd have to have a gun sitting on a stash of drugs, are you?
In the absence of evidence of on-site sales, I think we would need something that extreme, because otherwise we're left within relation to. Now, a gun on top of drugs is enough in this circuit under Pike to show carrying in furtherance of a drug trafficking crime, if it's in, for example, a car.
Just how close do you think the gun has to be to the drugs?
Well, I would say it has to be... Actually, I'm sorry, Your Honor, I would say that that's not particularly relevant. I would really rest on the fact that there is no evidence of the on-site sale. Now, with David's testimony of protection, that he kept the gun for protection, we have nothing to distinguish this from a case where the gun is not protected. It's possessed for something other than protection of the drugs. Now, people have guns to protect themselves. Probably almost every single gun kept by an American that's not kept for hunting purposes is kept for protection. Now, notwithstanding the judicial trope of
sporting use.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Could be a sporting use.
Fair enough. I'm trying to roll that in with hunting, but accept the distinction. We have language in a number of cases regarding the antique on the wall or the unloaded hunting rifle locked in a cabinet. A gun kept for protection is not going to be kept locked in a cabinet. It's going to be kept accessible. The only way to get from possession for protection to possession for protection of the drug conspiracy, as the government is inclined to fill in the blank, is by way of an inference that Congress has foreclosed. It's the common sense assumption that drug dealers possess guns to protect their drugs. If we accept this inference, if we accept the just-in-case rationale that the gun is there just in case somebody comes into the apartment, we are going to find possession in furtherance in every single case. And that is clearly not what Congress intended. The statute specifically goes to a nexus between firearm possession and drug trafficking. We have Section 922G if we want to get an unlawful possession of a firearm. That's not what we have in this case. Now, with regard to the factors instruction, which is related to this issue and also a question of first impression in the circuit, we need to ask whether these are really the factors we want the jury to consider. Now, again, with regard to the legality of possession, this is the task the government took to proving liability on the 924C count. They established that David was a felon in possession. They established he knew he was a felon in possession. They presented certification evidence showing that neither Frank nor David had a valid firearm permit in the city of Chicago. They brought that up again in closing. And then the jury is instructed that legality of possession is something that it should consider as to whether there's a nexus between the firearm and the drug trafficking crime. This is, again, this is not what the statute covers. We need more than this. The essential question for this court is really error. This is a pure question of law. It's here for the first time. And if it is an error, as the jury instruction was objected to below, there's no way that the government can overcome its burden, which is harmlessness beyond a reasonable doubt. This does not just mean substantial evidence of guilt. It means overwhelming evidence of guilt. It means no rational jury could have acquitted. Now, there's one other jury instruction relevant to this issue. It's the error that the defendant titled the Pettigo error in its reply brief. Besides being insufficient on the evidence, the 924C charge was unconstitutionally broadened. We have a single charge, a formal charge returned by the grand jury linked to a specific firearm, again, the Beretta. The jury was instructed, however, it could find liability for possession of a firearm. The definition of firearm was also generic. Given that 10 firearms were admitted at trial, this is a constructive amendment, this is error, and the government does not even argue that it's not error. There's no way to know at this point which conviction the gun rests on. In Sterone, the Supreme Court made clear that this sort of error affects substantial rights. Now, Pettigo, a Seventh Circuit case from 1993, already said that this error is per se reversible, even on plain error review. This is the correct approach, despite some uncertainty that we see in some of the other opinions. Jury confusion is always going to be likely with an error like this. In some cases, however, it is going to be difficult, if not impossible, for the defendant to show prejudice on appeal. Not so in this case, however. In this case, we actually have very clearly extra firearms, 9 in fact, taken from 4 locations as opposed to the 1 from which the charged firearm came. We also have extension of liability from co-conspirator liability to direct liability. This is overwhelmingly prejudicial. Even if your honors disagree with me with regards to the proper interpretation of 924C on these facts, we still need remand for a new trial because of this error. I reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ferrante. We'll hear now from Mr. Shrapp.
May it please the court, I'm Shake Shaft of the United States. I will begin where Mr. Ferrante started as well, and that is with regard to the 924C and furtherance language. One factor that the appellant has not pointed out to the court is that there was on-site distribution in this stash house. David Duran testified that he regularly left large quantities of cocaine for Frank Duran in a china cabinet, and that Frank Duran would in turn leave money in that china cabinet.
You don't mean to imply that on-site distribution is necessary, do you?
I do not mean to that it's necessary, but as a factual matter, I just want to make sure that the record is clear that the appellant has seemingly attempted to distinguish the D.C. Circuit cases that we've cited on the basis of on-site distribution. I just point out that among the factors that the court can consider is that on-site distribution was present here.
Well, David testified that the guns were for protection, and this is what it seems to me you're relying on to meet the in furtherance test. Won't this always be the case? Shouldn't in furtherance mean more than the guns were present, sort of just in case? Here we have Look, here we have no evidence, for example, that any drug transactions occurred at the location where the guns were seized. The site seems to have been simply a warehouse for the brothers.
But two things, Your Honor. First, I think there was evidence that the drugs were transacted in this stash house. And I think David Duran testified that he routinely left quantities of cocaine there that were then picked up, so that in the sense that it was used for distribution. In the sense of whether or not possession alone is enough, both the Fifth Circuit and the D.C. Circuit have drawn a distinction between the innocent possession and then both courts use of a well-mounted firearm, for example, or an unloaded hunting rifle, as being the kind of possession that Congress here was not intending to prohibit. Here, the fact that this was a semi-automatic firearm that was found in the bathrobe on the back of a bathroom door, in the vicinity of a bulletproof vest, large amounts of ammunition, cocaine, marijuana, so that in this instance, the jury was certainly reasonable in assuming or in concluding that this firearm was used in furtherance of the drug trafficking that was taking place in that apartment. And so the distinction of in furtherance, I would suggest that this is not even a particularly close case with the proximity of the firearm to the drugs, the assorted other
bulletproof vest.
I believe there was a flash suppressor, the scales with cocaine residue.
And let's talk about something else, because I'm kind of interested in what the relevance of the evidence is about the uncharged firearms. In other words, why did the government put in evidence on these other guns? For that matter, why did the government specify this particular gun, the Beretta, in the indictment?
Well, clearly the guns were introduced into evidence to demonstrate the scope and of the conspiracy, that firearms were used in a variety of locations by both brothers in furtherance of the conspiracy and to traffic drugs. The particular firearm was chosen. Clearly, it would have been, and just to go to the indictment issue, it was error to a better jury instruction would have included that the particular firearm, and I think we would concede that it was error to not track the language of the indictment. However, in light of the overwhelming evidence, as I've said in the brief, the Algae case, there was substantial evidence here of Frank Duran's guilt, and therefore that was a harmless error.
Tell me this, on the firearm issue, there were, you know, as I noted, the 10 firearms that were presented to the jury. Does the jury need to agree on which one the defendant possessed?
For conviction on the 924C,
mm-hmm.
not to uphold the conviction, Your Honor. The conviction here was there was substantial evidence of the possession of numerous firearms in furtherance of this drug trafficking crime. The indictment itself did limit itself to the Beretta, and the jury instruction was possession of a firearm. So, as I said, it probably was error for the district court not to more precisely instruct the jury. However, it does not, the government contend, is not, it doesn't overturn, it is the conviction should stand in that the jury could reasonably have found that firearm was possessed in furtherance of this drug trafficking crime.
You know, you never really respond to Frank's argument about the cumulative effect of admitting all of this evidence about David. In other words, you respond only to each piece of evidence individually. And he seems to have a good argument about confusing the jury. Check your brief at page 19. You confused Frank and David in your brief on the issue of who attempted to bribe the police officer. That's one example. Isn't it likely that the jury was similarly confused? I mean, I was confused.
Well, I would point out that David Duran testified at trial as to his brother's drug distribution activities and to the full scope of the conspiracy. So I think it is highly unlikely that the jury confused the two brothers or the acts that are attributable to each. Frank is liable under the law for David's activities that are illegal activities that are in furtherance of the conspiracy that are reasonably foreseeable. So I think it is unlikely, highly improbable, in fact, that a jury would confuse the two brothers when one is a defendant and one testifies against him. If I may,
I'm not asking you if they confused one with the other. I'm asking you about the cumulative effect of admitting all of the evidence about David.
That evidence is relevant to Frank's criminal liability. I mean, it's cumulative in the sense that maybe I don't understand your question, Your Honor.
I'm wondering why you confused Frank and David in your brief.
I'm looking for where...
Page 19.
And that's what I'm... Oh, there's the heading.
Evidence of Frank Duran's attempt to bribe the Chicago police officer.
Purely a
typo. He was stopped with crack cocaine.
Purely a typographical error, Your Honor.
Oh, okay. Let's talk about the jury instructions for a minute, because the jury instructions specified that the government need not prove every aspect of the agreement alleged. What I'm wondering is why you resisted an instruction explaining what was meant by aspect. If a conspiracy is an agreement, and you've now told the jury the government doesn't need to prove every aspect of the agreement, haven't you told the jury that the government doesn't have to prove every element of the conspiracy? I mean, it's just hopelessly confusing.
Well, I think one has to read that particular jury instruction in the light of the totality of the jury instructions which were given.
So you can have one jury instruction which is surely the one that any reasonable jury would hone in on, be totally upside down, and we should look at all the rest of the jury instructions?
Well, jury instructions are, as Your Honor knows, to be read as a whole. I don't...
Even though there's one right there that says, well, we don't have to prove every aspect here.
Well,
we can prove...
The remainder of the jury instructions did properly instruct the jury that on the burden of proof and on the agreement...
And the jury's supposed to know which ones are right, which ones are wrong.
I don't think that not proving every aspect... I mean, it is the law is that not every part of the conspiracy need be proved, nor does the conspiracy need to be...
What does aspect mean?
It's my understanding... Well, it has obviously a variety of... It was my understanding that it was
a
compromise between the district court and it was held in, as part of the conference to try to limit actually the confusion that Your Honor is pointing out, that not every... And it was, if I read the transcript correctly, it was a suggestion of the district court. I'm not 100% certain of that. But you need not prove that every part of the conspiracy was fulfilled, every aspect of this conspiracy was fulfilled. All that's necessary is the agreement.
So once the
agreement...
Well, maybe that's the aspect that wasn't fulfilled. Maybe it was the agreement that wasn't fulfilled.
Although the rest of the jury instruction did instruct the jury that it was required...
It was just hopelessly confusing.
I do not believe so, Your Honor. I don't think it is hopelessly confusing. I think the jury was properly instructed on that it need to find an agreement among David Duran and the other co-conspirators, and Frank Duran and the other co-conspirators, and that it had an illegal purpose. And it was properly instructed on both that and the burden of proof that had to be found.
It's pretty sloppy, isn't it?
Certainly, any time one writes jury instructions, we can tinker with the wording, which is why a district court is given broad discretion so long as a fundamental right or substantial rights that is not violated. And here, taken as a whole, the jury instructions fairly presented the jury with the burden of proof and the...
Anything unfair here? Anything unfair?
That's a difficult question. Anything unfair?
Mm-hmm.
I think the instructions properly taken as a whole instructed the jury on what it needed to find in order to find the defendant, Frank Duran, guilty of conspiracy.
Mr. Shakeshraff, could you address my colleague's concern with jury unanimity with respect to the weapon? How do we know that the jury was unanimous in deciding
that it was that particular?
That it was the Beretta.
That is clearly the most difficult issue here, whether or not the broadening of the indictment. This case is, in that respect, pretty closely in line with Algie, I'm sorry, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, where the court found that in light of the substantial evidence that was presented of other firearms, a fundamental right was not affected. Whether analytically one can be absolutely sure that the jury did not convict on the basis of another firearm in light of the indictment and the instruction.
How did counsel argue this particular issue to the jury?
Counsel did argued that, I believe, used the word a firearm. I have to go back and look at the record. I have to take a look at the closing argument.
But it is possible, for example, that a few jurors thought Frank possessed only the gun seized from his house, and others thought he possessed the Beretta or some of the
other
guns. That would be problematic. There's really no way to tell how they decided this, is there? I mean, that's one of the problems with a variance like this, isn't it?
It is. There's no question.
How did the evidence come in with regard to the Beretta?
It came in a variety of ways. One, from David Duran himself, who testified that he was presented with, was this in the apartment? He admitted that it was. It also came in from the officers who searched the residence.
But he admitted that it was in the apartment in the
bathroom. Correct. And that he used these guns, to be fair, taken cumulatively for protection, which was part of his testimony regarding the entire scope of the drug trafficking conspiracy. If the court has no further questions, we would ask, government would respectfully request the government that the court affirm the conviction.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Sure, you have 2 minutes left for rebuttal.
I would like to start by clearing up some factual discrepancies. The characterization of the record given by counsel is not entirely accurate. First of all, David did not testify that he kept firearms for protection. He testified that he kept the Beretta for protection. He never testified with regard to any of the other guns except for that they were found in the apartment. Further, David testified that Frank left him money at the apartment. He did not testify that he left drugs for Frank. That did come in through Ms. Gomez's testimony, but this is not something David discussed. More importantly,
there was a secret compartment in the china cabinet or something?
Underneath the drawer. More importantly, within the record, there is no evidence of use of firearms in connection with the conspiracy. David was stopped by the Chicago police on the street with a quarter kilogram of crack cocaine in his car, $5,500 worth of drugs in his car. He did not have a firearm on him at that time. So far as the evidence showed, the guns sat in the apartment. Now, the jury absolutely had to agree which firearm was possessed to legitimately convict Mr. Duran of possession and furtherance on the 924C count. There is no question. This is what's required. This is why we have a grand jury. This is why the instruction is error. Now, there's no way to tell from the record which firearm the jury was focused on.
What was the only firearm he testified he used for protection was a Beretta?
He testified that he kept it for protection.
And what was the charge in the indictment?
The charge in the indictment was possession of a firearm in furtherance of a drug trafficking crime. It was not a 922G charge. It was not just possession by a felon. Your Honor, this case is, in fact, about confusing the jury. This case is important for two primary reasons. First, as an issue of first impression, as we talked about at length, it's important to get the law and the circuit off on the right foot. Second, the government didn't do it right. The upstream plea to David Duran at the last minute right before trial, may I finish briefly?
Yes, please.
Thank you. Throughout the trial. And there are a number of mistakes that flow from that. The jury was confused. We need to try this again. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Ferrante, you appeared by appointment of the court in this case, and you have the deep thanks of the court for the excellent job you have done on behalf of your client, both in your fine brief and in your oral presentation today. And the court indeed thanks you for all your help. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel for a very fine job this morning. The case will be taken under advisement.